Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Furlings. The Fastest 60-Minute Sports Rolling, Episode 13 out of Season 4. Week 13 is upon us, and even though our Bears are toast for 2014, there's a lot of great football being played. How about them Arizona Cardinals? And, of course, I'm always Mr. Optimistic. You catch us every Sunday here at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 10 p.m. in Middle Earth, the hottest pregame show in sports, the pregame show to all the pregame shows. The big networks will be coming along soon with their NFL. If you're looking for your AFC games, you're looking at your CBS affiliates. If you're looking at your NFC games, you're looking at your Fox affiliates today. So, the Redskins have decided to sit RG3 in lieu of Colt McCoy. Nebraska fires Pelini as their head coach, going in a different direction. All these transitions are getting started, and very little from hot stove in baseball. How fitting. NBA is rocking and rolling. Bulls are 10-6 for those of you in Middle Earth. Trying to catch the upstart Toronto Raptors, who are 13-3, and actually leading the way in the NBA East. So, go Toronto. Anyway, let's get you started with your fantasy updates for those of you playing fantasy sports today. We're not going to belabor the time because it's Sunday, week 13, and there's a lot going on. So, for those of you playing your fantasy playoffs, maybe you ran round one, which would be typically week 13, week 14 at this time. Anyway, here you go. Top 10 quarterbacks this week. If you've got them, start them. If you don't, hopefully you're not playing against them. Number 10, Alex Smith out of Kansas City. Number 9, Phillip Rivers. Number 8, Eli Manning. Number 7, Ryan Tannehill. Number 6, Ben Roethlisberger. Number 5, Drew Brees. Number 4, Tom Brady. Number 3, Andrew Luck. Number 2, Peyton Manning. And the number 1 quarterback start today, Aaron Rodgers. How fitting. Aaron Rodgers 1, Tom Brady 4. Kind of hard to go wrong in that game if you're playing fantasy sports. Those are your top 10 quarterbacks of the fantasy rankings this week, courtesy of our friends over at ESPN. Let's move on to the running backs. Now, there's been a lot of love for Denard Robinson lately. I guess he had an off week last week, but whatever he's doing down there in Jacksonville must be pretty good. Anyway, here you go. Top 10 this week in the running back category. Number 10, Rashad Jennings to the Giants. Number 9, Denard Robinson in Jacksonville. Number 8, Andre Ellington in Arizona. Number 7, Alfred Morris in Washington. Number 6, C.J. Anderson. Number 5, Justin Forsett. He's in Baltimore. Number 4, Eddie Lacy. Number 3, Jamal Charles in Kansas City. Number 2, Arian Foster in Houston. And number 1, Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh. I had a big game last week. Look for him to hopefully duplicate those same kind of performances for you this week. To the wide receivers this week. 10 all the way down. Top 10, Julio Jones. Number 9, Randall Cobb in Green Bay. Number 8, Odell Beckham Jr. If he's back from those concussion-like syndromes. Number 7, Emmanuel Sanders in Denver. Number 6, T.Y. Hilton in Indianapolis. Number 5, Jordy Nelson in Green Bay. Number 4, Josh Gordon in Cleveland. That's odd. Number 3, A.J. Green. Number 2, Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. Number 1, Demaryius Thomas. And that's all because look who's throwing to him. You'd be hard-pressed to go wrong with Demaryius Thomas or Antonio Brown. If you've got him, you're starting him. If you got A.J. Green and Josh Gordon, you'd be hard-pressed not to start either one of those guys as well. So, enjoy that. Let's go on to your tight ends this week. Tight ends. I just felt like doing that. I'm sorry. All right, top 10 tight ends this week. Number 10, Kyle Rudolph in Minnesota. Number 9, Julius Thomas in Denver. Number 8, Kobe Fleener in Indianapolis. Number 7, Larry Donald with the Giants. Number 6, Travis Kelce. Number 5, Antonio Gates. Number 4, Delanie Walker. Number 3, Greg Olsen. Number 2, Jimmy Graham. And number 1, it seems like it's become a bit of a record now, Rob Gronkowski. Since Brady and Gronkowski have come back together and Gronk is healthy, that's the combination. If it's not Gronk, it's Jimmy Graham. So either one of those tight ends, if you got them, you're starting them. If you don't, let's just hope you're not playing either one of those guys today because they may have big, big days. Okay? Gronk goes up against Green Bay's defense, and that secondary is not very strong. Graham goes up against Pittsburgh secondary, which is also not that strong as well. All right, so that's it for your tight ends. Let's move on. We're talking defenses now. Top 10 defenses this week. The Giants, they got Jacksonville. Baltimore Ravens at number 9. The Colts, number 8. The Bengals at number 7. The Vikings at number 6. The Texans at number 5. The Rams at number 4. The Arizona Cardinals at number 3. The Buffalo Bills at number 2. This week, purely matchup driven, the Miami Dolphins. Great defense against a poor New York Jets offense. So if you've got the Dolphins on D, you're definitely starting them this week. All right. Kickers this week. Yes, the Vitey kickers. The guys who get you the 1-3 points that just might put you over the hump. Number 10 this week, Connor Barth in Denver. Number 9, Randy Bullock in Houston. Number 8, Sean Swism in Pittsburgh. Number 7, Matt Bryan in Atlanta. Number 6, Danny Carpenter. Number 5, Caleb Sturgis in Miami. Number 4, Justin Tucker in Baltimore. Number 3, Mason Crosby. Number 2, Adam Vinatieri. Number 1, Stephen Gostkowski. That is New England. Gostkowski is either 1 or 2 almost every single week. Why? Because that team puts up a lot of points. It's that simple. So there are your rankings for this week. Hopefully you're doing well in your fantasy playoffs and you're not having to look down the throat of somebody who's got like Aaron Rodgers and Gronk at the same time, because that would be just an ugly matchup for you. Headline news. As I told you earlier, Nebraska fires coach Bo Pelini, heading in new directions. Iron Bowl shootout last night goes to Alabama. We're going to get you your top 25 countdown and get your scores. Ole Miss takes down number 4 Mississippi State. Ooh. All right. Well, here we go. Let the fun stuff begin. Let's get you the top 25 down. Here's your scoreboard from last night. Number 25, Utah, 38-34 over Colorado. Number 24, Marshall, continues his unbeaten ways. Oh, I'm sorry. Am I seeing this right? I need to verify this. This says Marshall lost 67-66 in a football game. 67-66. It's not a basketball game. It's a football game. Number 23, Boise State, 50-19 over USU. Number 22, Louisville, 44-40 over Kentucky. Number 21, Clemson, 35-17 over South Carolina. Number 17, Mizzou, 21-14 over Arkansas. Number 14, Wisconsin, takes down number 18, Minnesota, 34-24. Number 12, Kansas State, takes care of Kansas University, the KU, the basketball school, 51-13, big time scoring there. Arizona upsets Arizona State, 42-35. That was an 11 versus a 13 matchup. Number 10, Michigan State, 34-10 over Penn State. Number 16, Georgia Tech beats Georgia, 30-24. UCLA loses to Stanford, 31-10. Didn't see that coming. Number 7, Baylor outlasts Texas Tech, 48-46. Oklahoma State, no, sorry, that's my Ohio State, 42-28 over Michigan. They gave up 28 points. That's not going to look good for their rankings, but nonetheless, they still win. Florida State takes care of Florida, 24-19. It maintains its unbeaten streak. And number 1, Alabama, 55-44 over Auburn in what had to be a very entertaining Iron Bowl. If Alabama gave up 44 points to the 50th-ranked Auburn Tigers, what's that going to say to the committee when they vote Tuesday night? So what does this mean to the college playoff circuit? Well, number 1 will still be number 1. Let's get this in front of us and see what we're working with here. Let's do that. Looking at the rankings. All right. So what do we know? We know Alabama's 10-1, Oregon's 10-1, Florida State is 11-0, Mississippi State is 10-1 now because they lost last night. TCU 9-1. What do we know? We realize we know nothing at all. Okay, how about that? The playoff pitcher has been thrown into an absolute tailspin with Mississippi State losing last night. So the can of worms has opened up for, let's see, Ohio State, Baylor. UCLA losing yesterday kind of ticks them out. They were on a hard charging path until they lost to Stanford last night at 9-1. So now 9-2. Georgia 9-2. Michigan State 9-2. Those guys are all done. So this lays up pretty nicely for an Ohio State team now to slide into the number 4 spot. Now the Mississippi State has lost. So much for the Magnolia State having all that love. That is all done now. Ole Miss has lost. Mississippi State loses. So Alabama 10-1. Oregon 10-1. Those guys aren't going to change. Florida State will probably be at number 3 if they don't bump Oregon into number 2. And the question now is, does TCU get the love to go to 4? Or does Ohio State get the love to go to 4? Therein lies the question. Whose resume is more impressive, TCU's or Ohio State? Who belongs in the 4 spot? You know, maybe we'll ask you guys that on Twitter. We'll also ask you that on Facebook, and you can give your feedback to whether or not which team you think should be in that number 4 seed for that playoff ring, because we're running out of games. 11 games down, most of these teams have conference playoffs left, and that's about it. They're going to have one or two more sittings with these college football rankings, and that is going to be it. And someone's going to be left holding a bag. And then right now, it actually looks like the team holding the bag could actually be Ohio State, which is going to be kind of disappointing. A team that's, the Big Ten's a big conference, but the conference has not fared well. TCU has earned a spot to be there. They certainly put up enough points. They have a great resume. This is why your coaches are climbing for an 8-team playoff instead of a 4-team playoff. It makes the most sense. If you have 8 teams, you don't have this issue. If you go 8 teams deep into this ranking system, I think you get everybody. You get everybody that is somebody. You're going to have 1 2-loss team. Maybe in this case it would have been a UCLA or a Georgia or a Michigan State. But you would have had an absolute Donnybrook of a playoff circuit. Absolutely. But it is 4, the first time around. So Alabama, Oregon, Florida State, Mississippi State, done. So it looks right now. Unless the committee decides to really, really be favorable to the overall resume, I think Mississippi State's time in that ranking is, then again, timing of the loss critical. You cannot lose it late in the season. It's that simple. All right, right or wrong, it is what it is. That is the matter at hand. Sorry, guys. We're back. We're back after this.
There's a burger joint for you and me.
There's a burger joint for you and me.
Quarter pounders are all I see.
Quarter pounders. please?
Sound off.
Cream cheese and garlic.
Bacon mushroom cheeseburger.
Wasabi burger.
Salsa burger.
Honey mustard burger.
Blue cheeseburger.
Big appetites call for big burgers. At the Burger Joint, you get those 100% beef quarter pounders topped with fresh veggies and special sauces. Flame broiled to burger perfection.
Quarter pounders are all I see.
The Burger Joint. Big burgers, big on taste.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Everybody knows that, Parker.
Well, did you know auctioneers make bad grocery store clerks?
It'll be $23.50. Now $75, $23.75, hold on, I'm heading it down, $23.75, $24, hey, $24, 24 and a quarter, quarter, now half, 24 and a half, and 75, and 25, now a quarter, hey, 26 and a quarter, hold on, I'm heading it down, 20, you want to do it, 5 and a quarter? Sold to the man in the khaki jacket.
GEICO, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Will you fight?
No! We will run! And we will live!
Shame on you!
This could be the greatest night of our lives. But you're gonna let it be the worst.
And I guarantee a week won't go by in your life you won't regret walking out, letting them get the best of you.
Well, I'm not going home.
You've got too far!
And I'm gonna stay right here and fight for this lost cause.
A day may come when the courage of men fails, but it is not this day.
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
I'm not saying it's going to be easy.
You're going to work harder than you ever worked before.
But that's fine, we'll just get tougher with it.
If a person grits his teeth and shows real determination,
failure is not an option.
That's how winning is done.
Believe me when I say
we can break this army here
and win just one for the Gipper.
But I say to you, what every warrior has known since the beginning of time,
you've got to get mad.
I mean plumb mad dog mean.
If you would be free men, then you must
fight to fulfill that promise. Let us
cut out their living guts
1 inch at a time.
And they will know what we can do.
Let no man forget how menacing we are. We are lions.
You're like a big bear, man.
This is your time.
Seize the day.
Never surrender.
Victory or death.
Patch the Chicago.
Who's with me?
Clap! Clap! Don't let me die! Clap!
All right, let's fly!
And gentlemen in England, now abed. Shall
we? No, my name is the Lord. But I
tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take
our Independence Day.
Welcome back to the fourth season of the Fastest 60 Minutes in Sports. I'm Vicky Nunu, and you're listening to my baby, your host, Vinny Moore.
And it's a great intro, as we do every week when we get the opportunity to do so. We get with our friends, not only from the healthcare side, but the neurological science side, and basically people who are significantly smarter than we are. And whether it's news or the weird, people that just have some insight and things to share, we want to be sure we've expanded not only our listening audience, but the cores of our abilities to learn. This week, our friend Dr. Nunu comes to us with a tidbit on an old basketball player that was once relevant. Now, maybe not so much, but the next 10 minutes belong to her. Take it away, Doc. It's all yours.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Vicky Nunu, and I'm back here on the Fastest 60 Minutes in Sports. This week's segment is on Dennis Keith Rodman, better known as The Worm, is a retired American professional basketball player who played for the Detroit Pistons, San Antonio Spurs, Chicago Bulls, Los Angeles Lakers, and the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA. Forward position in his early years before becoming a power forward, he earned NBA All-Defensive First Team honors 7 times and won the NBA Defensive Player of the Year award 2 times. He also led the NBA in rebounds per game for a record of 7 consecutive years and won 5 NBA championships. He is arguably the best rebounding forward in NBA history. On April 1, 2011, the Pistons retired Rodman's number 10 jersey, and he is inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame later that year. Apart from basketball, Rodman is a retired part-time professional wrestler and actor. He was born in Trenton, New Jersey, in May of 1961. stood 6 feet, 7 inches tall, and weighed 220 pounds. When he was young, his father left his family. Rodman had many brothers and sisters, and according to his father, he has either 26 or 27 siblings on his father's side. However, according to Rodman himself, he claims he is the oldest of 47 children. After his father left, his mother took many odd jobs to make ends meet, at times as many as four jobs to support her family. The impoverished Rodman and his two sisters grew up with their mother in Oak Cliff section of Dallas, Texas, and at the time was considered to be the worst areas in Texas and Dallas. He felt overwhelmed by the all-female household. While attending South Oak Cliff High School, Rodman was a gym class student of a future Texas A&M basketball coach, Gary Blair. Blair had also coached Rodman's sister, winning 3 state championships. However, Rodman was considered not an athletic standout. According to Rodman, he was unable to hit a layup and was listed in the high school basketball teams, but was either benched or cut from the squad. Measuring at the time only 5 feet 6 inches as a freshman in high school, he also failed football teams and was totally devastated. After finishing school, Rodman worked as an overnight janitor in the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport. He experienced a sudden growth spurt and decided to try basketball yet again, this time with better success. Rodman experienced an unhappy childhood and was shy and introverted in his early years. He had named himself a bad boy and became notorious for numerous controversial antics. He repeatedly dyed his hair and he regularly disrupted games by clashing with opposing players and officials. Rodman made himself eligible in the 1986 NBA draft. He was drafted by the Detroit Pistons as the 3rd pick in the 2nd round, 27th overall. Joining the rugged team coach Chuck Daly that was called Bad Boys for their hard-nosed approach to basketball. In the following 1987-1988 season, Rodman steadily improved his stats, averaged 11.6 points and 8.7 rebounds, and starting in 32 of 82 regular season games. He remained a bench player during the 1988-1989 season, averaging 9.0 points and 9.4 rebounds in 27 minutes. Yet providing such effective defense that he was voted into the All-Defensive Team the first of 8 times in his career. In 1993-1994 season, Rodman joined the Spurs team, which was built around perennial All-Star center David Robinson, with a supporting cast of forwards Dale Ellis, Willie Nelson, and Vinny Del Negro. On the hardwood, Rodman now was played as a power forward and won his 3rd straight rebounding title, averaging 17.3 boards per game, along with another all-defensive team call-up. Living to his promise of killing the shy imposter and being himself, instead, Rodman began to show signs of unconventional behavior. Before the first game, he shaved his hair and he dyed it blonde, which was followed by scents of red, purple, and blue. During the season, he headbutted Stacey King and John Stockton and refused to leave the hardwood after being ejected. In the following 1994-1995 NBA season, Rodman clashed with the Spurs front office. He was suspended for the first 3 games, took a leave of absence on November 11th, and was suspended again on December the 7th. He finally returned on December the 10th after missing 19 games. After joining the team, he suffered a shoulder separation and a motorcycle accident, limiting his season to 49 games. Normally, he would not have qualified for any seasonal records for missing so many games, but grabbing 832 rebounds, he just surpassed the 800 rebound limit for listing players and won his 4th rebounding title by averaging 16.8 boards per game and made the All-NBA team. Rodman admitted his frequent transgressions, but asserted that he lived his own life and thus a more honest life than most people. "I just took the chance to be my own man," he said. "If you don't like it, kiss my ass. Most people around the country or around the world are basically working people. Hey, it's all right to be different, and I think they feel, let's go and see what this guy has to do to entertain us." Prior to the 1995-1996 NBA season, Rodman was traded to the Chicago Bulls. Although the trade for the already 34-year-old volatile Rodman was considered a gamble at the time, the power forward quickly adapted to his new environment, helped by the fact that his best friend, Jack Haley, was also traded to the Bulls. Boston, he averaged 5.5 points and 14.9 rebounds per game, winning yet another rebounding title, and was part of the great Bull teams that won 72 of 82 regular game seasons, an all-time NBA record. Although struggling with calf problems early in the season, Rodman grabbed 20 or more rebounds 11 times and had his first triple-double against the Philadelphia 76ers on January 16, 1996, scoring 10 points and adding 21 rebounds and 10 assists. By playing his trademark touch of defense, he joined Jordan and Pippen on the All-NBA Defense First Team. Ever controversial, Rodman made negative headlines after a headbutt of referee Ted Bernhardt during a game in New Jersey on March 16, 1996. In 1996 NBA playoffs, Rodman scored 7.5 points and grabbed 13.7 rebounds per game and had a large part in the six-game victory against the Seattle Supersonics in the 96 NBA Finals. In Game 2 at home at the Bulls United Center, he grabbed 20 rebounds, among them a record-tying 11 offensive boards, scored 5 points in a decisive 12-2 Bulls run, unnerved opposing power forward Sean Kemp, and kept Seattle coach to say, "As you evaluate the series, Dennis Rodman won 2 basketball games. We controlled Dennis Rodman for 4 games, but Game 2 and tonight, he was the reason they were successful. His 2 games with 11 offensive rebounds each tied the NBA final records with Elvin Hayes." In 1996-1997 NBA season, Rodman won his 6th rebounding title in a row with 16.7 boards per game, along with 5.7 points per game, but failed to rank another all-defensive team call-up. However, he made more headlines for his notorious behavior. On January 15, 1997, he was involved in an incident during a game against the Minnesota Timberwolves. After tripping over Cameron and Eugene Amos, Rodman kicked Amos in the groin. Though he was not assessed a technical foul at the time, he paid Amos $200,000 settlement, and the league suspended Rodman for 11 games without pay. Thus, he effectively lost $1 million. Missing yet another 3 games to suspension, often getting technical fouls during early in the games and missing an additional 13 due to knee problems. Rodman was not effective in the 97 NBA playoffs, in which the Bulls reached the 97 NBA final against the Utah Jazz. He struggled to slow down Jazz power Karl Malone. The regular season of 1997-98 ended with Rodman winning his 7th consecutive rebounding title with 15.0 points per game, along with 4.7 points per game. Rodman was released by the Bulls on January 21st of 1999, before the start of the lockout shortened. In 1988-99 NBA season, he joined the Los Angeles Lakers for a prorated salary for the remainder of the 98-99 season. With the Lakers, he had only played 23 games and was released. His heart was just not in it. He never wanted to be a Maverick and therefore was very unmotivated. After his NBA career, Rodman took a long break from basketball and concentrated on his film career and then his wrestling. After a long hiatus, Rodman returned to play basketball for the Long Beach Jam of the newly formed American Basketball Association during 2003-2004 season, with hopes of being called up to the NBA mid-season. He returned to NBA just given the playoffs. With winning 2 NBA championships with the Detroit Pistons and 3 to the Chicago Bulls in the 1980s and 90s, led the league into rebounding with 7 straight times from 92 to 98, made 2 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and was inducted into the NBA Hall of Fame in 2011. You're one of the most visually distinctive athletes of the world. Thank you for joining us on the Fastest 60 Minutes in Sports. I turn you back now to my super champ, your greatest host in sports, Mr. Vinny Moore.
Welcome back to the 4th season of the Fastest 60 Minutes in Sports. I'm Vicky Nunu, and you're listening to my baby, your host, Vinny Moore.
Yeah, camel, giddy up, hit it. When I say giddy up, I mean giddy up.
classic Yosemite Sam for those of you looking for that this morning. News of the Weird is around the corner. We have got 25 left in Days Ride. Headline news, Nebraska fires Bo Pelini, goes a new direction. Playoff run in the West Coast could save Jim Harbaugh's job. Rice drawing interest from teams. That's Ray Rice himself. Now, for those of you who have been asleep at the wheel, Ray Rice has won his appeal. And there are teams looking for a good running back. So, you obviously know that you can't forego a right to make a, you know, make an honest living. So, there are, according to Adam Schefter, four teams looking for a running back interested in what Ray Rice may offer. Let's see if we can figure out what these four teams might be. These four teams have expressed Rice interest in Rice, blah, blah, blah. Indianapolis, New Orleans, though the Colts and Saints are not expected to pursue him, according to multiple league sources. Two sources declined to identify the other two teams that have been checking into Rice. It still will be difficult for Rice to find work this season. He turns 28 in January, coming off a down season that hasn't played football since training camp. But Rice signing this season is not out of the question either, if the right team should emerge. Multiple NFL executives have said the profile of a team willing to sign Rice would be one that is a contender with injuries in its backfield and a strong-minded head coach. Well, that makes sense. You're going to be asking to put yourself in an absolute sieve by bringing this kid on your program and expecting to walk into opposing team arenas without the scrutiny of everything that's been done there. Some guys learn faster than others. They just do. As Coach told Josina Anderson, I don't know what kind of shape he's in. There are a bunch of different things he's going to have to get into. They're going to have to get in shape, clearly, because he hasn't been hitting this year. You would think there would be some carryover, but he's a player. He's a very good player. As for how Rice might fit back into the locker room, I don't know that, Coach told Anderson. It's a different thing. It was so violent, such a volatile conversation earlier. I don't know how guys in the locker room would think about this, really. I don't. We don't interact with them like that. I'm not in those conversations with them about how they feel about issues like that. I don't know. I'd be speaking out of turn to probably address that one. Rice is determined to sign with the right team in the right situation, or he's prepared to wait at least to see what additional opportunities present themselves this offseason. The reality is he's won his appeal. He has the right to go back. He can sign with any football team now. If you were an NFL owner, would you sign Ray Rice? 619-639-4747. 619-639-4747. Would you sign Ray Rice? He is available if you need a running back. If you are the Buffalo Bills, Freddie Jackson's hurt, C.J. Spiller's hurt, you need a running back, you're actually a contending team, you got a shot to make the playoffs. Do you go out and do you sign Ray Rice? The Ravens will want nothing to do with him. You can bank on that. The embarrassment is, and the scar is too deep. If you're in the NFC, going on NFC playoff teams in my head now, Dallas doesn't need him. The Giants aren't a contender. The Eagles have got LeSean McCoy. Does he go to Minnesota? How weird would it be if Minnesota and Baltimore just traded players inevitably? Ray Rice goes and signs with Minnesota. Adrian Peterson goes and signs with the Ravens. Who wins that situation? Obviously, the Ravens win that situation. But nonetheless. Other news today. Overwhelmed by demands for money, Dallas Tyron Smith took action against his own family. What's this about? Took action against his own family. Why Tyron Smith told his family no. Financial request overwhelmed Smith. I believe Tyron Smith to be the old lineman for these guys. Let's see what we got here. Former NFL cornerback Eric Allen shares his experiences in dealing with family friends after signing his big contract. That's all on ESPN.com. Here's a challenge. Imagine what it feels like to be 21 years old, extremely successful, famous, wealthy, wildly stressed, unbearably miserable. How you might wonder, can all those conditions exist simultaneously? Start here with the Cowboys all-pro offensive tackle Tyron Smith talking to his mother on the phone one day in 2012. His second year in the NFL during a time of growing tension between him and his family over money issues. We found a house, Frankie Pickens told her son. By this stage, Weariness had become as intrinsic to Smith's identity as his brown eyes and bouquet shoulders. Silently, he awaited details. He had agreed to purchase a home in Southern California for his mother and stepfather. They would live in it. He would own it as an investment. The agreed-upon budget was roughly $300,000. But over the course of the conversation, Frankie dropped the bomb, list price more than $800,000. Smith, now 23, is sitting at a polished wood table in the conference room of his lawyer's Dallas office, surrounded by his girlfriend, financial advisor, and lawyer. He fixes his eyes on a spot somewhere high on the floor to the ceiling. "Yeah, my parents wanted a house," Smith says, "but it was way bigger than mine and cost way more than mine." It's not an easy topic for Smith to discuss, recounting the conversation appears to be nearly as hard as being on the phone in the first place. He long ago gave up trying to pinpoint when all of it went so wrong, when the combination of family and money turned corrosive, and when one ceased to exist without the other. He recites facts stripped out of emotion as it determined to turn a painful time in his life an after-action report. "That call," he says, "that was the point where I said that's enough." At that precise moment, as he hung up the phone without giving his mother assent or encouragement, something hardened inside him. Reclaiming his finances, that was the easy part. Demystifying his new life, being something other than a conduit of wishes for those around him, that was more complicated. It works like this. We lack the linguistic dexterity to explain the myriad paths of young men who emerge from poverty or simply lack of privilege and achieve riches by playing a game. When words fail us, a creation of myth must fill the void. And so the modern professional athlete becomes our Sidria, a massive woman of Intuit legend who lives at the bottom of the ocean, controlling the underworld and providing fish to keep her people from going hungry. Our version of Sedna frees himself from the streets, the temptation, the poverty, the turbulent flow of every bad part of town. Through the ceaseless, unquenchable devotion to his support, visions of the escape accompany every rep on the bench press, every free throw in an empty gym, in gym shorts. His life is a series of made-in Akron beats of Dre moments. Yes, he will rise up to leave it all behind, but there's always the methodology, sleight of hand, that appears. He'll bring it all with him, too. He can't forget where he came from. The myth mandates loyalty and strikes down the ingrates. And all those people who toiled alongside, those who believed in him and sheltered him and sacrificed for him, they'll also be coming along. For he's the sin eater, absorbing all debts, moral and financial. So either he can be absolved, and his people will never go hungry again. Tyron Smith, dealing with family issues. Thoughts on that? 619-639-4747. Again, 619-639-4747 for thoughts on that. For those of you in the Middle Earth, no Chicago Bears weekend. They kind of laid an egg Thursday against the Lions, 34-17. Got out to a 14-3 start and just literally crapped the bed after all that was said and done. So no Bears action today. It's going to be quiet. The game of the day, Green Bay, New England. Then picks did not get completed, so we're going to do those live for you. Matter of fact, we can probably do those now. 16 left in the ride. Let's get this out of the way now so you can know what to do when you go to the window today, for those of you who are going to the window. And I, for one, am not, but you might be. So let's see what we can share with you today. NFL schedule today. Let's tell you exactly what we're looking at. Yeah, we're not doing that. Much more than leftovers, injuries, and picks. Here we go. Let's see who's doing what today. We got picks against the spread. Well, let's see. There's got to be a simple way to do that. I don't want to scroll through all this. That seems like it's a lot. That's a little bit much. Yeah, we want to get you what you need a lot. So then that wouldn't have pages to refresh. That seems a little bit much. Let's just do it like this. All right. You know the Lions took care of Chicago on Thursday. There were some other games that also got taken care of that weekend. Let's see. Seattle 19-3 over San Francisco. Philadelphia blows out Dallas 33-10. All right. Here you go. Today, Washington at Indianapolis. a tough one, ladies and gentlemen. I've been rooting for my Redskins. They're making a quarterback change, but Indy, I think, is just too strong. Cincinnati at Tampa Bay. It's also a 1 o'clock start. The Bengals going up against the 1-and-whatever Tampa Bay Buccaneers. The Bengals should have a little bit too much talent for that, but it is in Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay does tend to play better there. Josh McCown has played better. They can keep him upright. They got a shot to win it, but I think Cincinnati wins this game. Tennessee at Houston. You know, normally this would have been a Houston Texans blowout, but Tennessee has played tough lately. Mettenberger's getting rest with the number one team now. I still got to go with the Houston Texans, but Tennessee will make a game of it. Cleveland at Buffalo. Got to like Cleveland this game. Buffalo with Kyle Orton is a better football team. But Cleveland's on a playoff run right now, and this game is important more to Cleveland than to Buffalo. So, well, Buffalo's in the hunt for that wild card spot in that division, but I think Cleveland gets this done today. San Diego at Baltimore. Can someone wake up the San Diego Chargers and tell us which version we're going to see today? Because one moment they look like world beaters, the next minute they look like they're getting beat down by a two-year-old. Today it looks like the Baltimore Ravens are the guppies, so you know what? The Baltimore's probably going to win this game since it's in Baltimore, and San Diego just does not play well, you know, when they're inconsistent. The New York Giants at the Jacksonville Jaguars. This should be an Eli Manning show, but I don't trust the New York Giants, and Denard Robinson's played better from the running back position, so you know what? Let's shock the world. Let's say Jacksonville gets this game today for the sake of craps and giggles. Oakland at St. Louis. The Rams can play defense. That's all you got to know. The Rams get this game. New Orleans at Pittsburgh. That should be a game. It's in Pittsburgh. It's going to be in the cold this afternoon. I'm actually going to take Pittsburgh to win this game. Let's see. Carolina at Minnesota. We had a myriad of turnover and changes. Minnesota's tried to hang in there. Carolina should have too much power. But you know what? It's in Minnesota, and that can change things. It's going to be cold. It's going to be windy. Let's take the Vikings to upset Carolina in that game. Arizona at Atlanta. The game is indoors in the Georgia Dome. Everyone's going to be comfortable, and Arizona has way too much talent. Take the Cardinals in that game. They're used to playing indoors. New England at Green Bay. Game of the day. I'm not sure if it's going to be on Fox or on CBS, but it's on somewhere, and you're going to want to be somewhere where you can watch this one. New England-Green Bay should be the game of the year on paper. Don't know who's going to win. Like to believe New England can go in there and save face. But that's Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is a bad man, especially at home in Green Bay. Eddie Lacy will be running the ball. Jonas Grant may be running the ball for New England, so this could be fun. I'm going to lean toward New England just ever so slightly, just because their record in past November the 1st is unconscionably good. So let's go New England in this game. Denver at Kansas City. Whenever these two teams come together, it's just a Donnybrook. It's going to be in Kansas City. Kansas City plays well at home. Denver does well on the road with Peyton Manning. I don't know. If it comes down to a last second drive, I like Peyton Manning to win the game. If it comes down to a last second drive without Alex Smith, not so much. So I'm pondering. I asked the clerk. Well, that's another story. I was going to meld the two together nonetheless. Denver, Kansas City. You know, we got to go with Denver because that's still Peyton Manning. But I would not be surprised if Kansas City and Alex Smith will find a way to pull this game out. Monday night, Miami at the New York Jets. Miami's playing much better than in the playoff hunt. Great defense against a Jets team that is porous, playing Michael Vick. Just don't see the Jets having much of a shot in this game. Miami should dominate. And if you're playing fantasy sports, you want Miami's defense in the play this weekend. Okay. As far as anything else goes, well, that's just anything else. Get the ESPN.com if you need more insight. Auburn loses the Iron Bowl to Alabama last night. Good game. A lot of fun. A lot of points being scored over this weekend. So there you go. Anything else we need to share with you from the world of ESPN? Guess not. Let's talk a little bit about the boxing world and what is going on here. It's up in the air. You have Manny Pacquiao now calling out Floyd Mayweather telling Pacquiao to shut up, and you've got a bunch of boxers who look like they act like they're afraid to fight each other. Fighters afraid to fight. Go figure. It's all about the money ultimately, and someone puts $40 million on the table, Manny Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather will get it on. Until that time comes, the rest of us are just crying and hankering for a chunk of cheese, basically. From the NBA, the 76ers have plummeted to 0-16. They set a franchise mark for the worst start in franchise history. Over. Now, I don't know what the longest official record is for the losses in an NBA season for an NBA team. But 16 is a nasty, nasty number to start with. 0 for 16. 0 for 16. I'm trying to wrap my head around that. 0 for 16. 0 for. 0 for. There's nothing you can do to say about that. 0 for 16. You got 82 games. Now, I mentioned no team's ever lost all 82 games. But this idea that a college basketball team could beat this NBA pro team is kind of funny. That the young boys from Kentucky, the number one team in the nation, could go into to a neutral stadium and play Philadelphia and win. And by the way, have you seen Kentucky's basketball squad? The top five recruits around the country all come together again for Calipari again to be number one in the nation again. And yeah, we're just waiting for them to make a mistake in the tournament because they're probably not going to make a lot of them during the regular season. You can just bet on that. All right? All right, so let's see. Well, what am I looking at here? Nine minutes to go left in the ride. All right. Let's see. Nothing happening from NASCAR. We really should streamline these things. You get your college football love. Well, gentlemen, it's looking kind of thin. 76ers are just over. Nothing else to go on from the NBA besides that. Let's get your NBA rankings now. If for nothing more than your conference rankings. Once it refreshes. Let's see. For those of you looking for a place to get shoes, Foot Locker's Week of Greatness is back. Get by your local Foot Locker, see what deals are out there. This past week was the anniversary of the brawl in Auburn Hill. Y'all remember the brawl that didn't the Ron Artest falling on the scores table after Big Ben pushes him off of the jury prison? What was this last time? I forgot that quick on it. Shoot. All right, you get a chance, get out to YouTube today and look up the NBA fight. Seriously, look at the NBA fight. It'll be one of the top ones. Believe that. NBA brawl will be the same thing. It'll take you back to how it all started, you know, who did what to who, and how that opened up a whole new level of dialogue with the NBA as it relates to stadium securities. And, again, issues along that line. Again, fans, unfortunately, they started this whole thing. When Ron Artest gets that whole thing kind of goes away quickly, and then Ron goes over to the Lakers table, and the game kind of continues on. And for what it's worth, I don't know if you guys can hear this in the background, but there is audio playing around that fight for you to hear. Ben Wallace, that was the player's name. And suffice to say, Wallace had a decent career with the Pistons. Not so good career when he went to Chicago for a couple of cans of soup, basically. But the anniversary of this now comes in light. Player reaction to crowd control, and what fans should do versus what fans ought to do when they go to sporting events and how they should comport themselves. I don't know what side of the equation you decide to fall on, but the reality is you have paid for a ticket. You certainly have the right to boo and cheer accordingly. You do not have the right to interfere with the game or interfere with someone's livelihood, nor do you have the right to go out there and throw things on the court. And then since this thing had actually calmed down, it had calmed down. Wallace had calmed down. Players were walking away. Artest is laying on the scorer's table. And a fan throws a beer or a glass of something on this player laying on the scoring table. And that's what exacerbates the whole situation. Okay? Now, they're showing the clip now, even on YouTube. And you've got Artest laying on the table. You've got Ben Wallace still heated, being talked to by players trying to get him to calm down. Still looking for someone to get into. Steven Jackson is being Steven Jackson, which is basically inciting and exacerbating a situation that was largely under control. Now, Artest at this point jumps over, then goes after the fan who throws the beer at him, grabs the fan. Security cannot get there in time. You've got fans trying to pull players off the fan, players trying to pull players off the fan. I don't know what you would do if you're that player. If you're Ron Artest and you're laying there, and out of nowhere this beer just gets thrown on you. I mean, and again, this game was out of hand. It's 45-second game. The game has been decided. Indiana's up 97-82. There was absolutely no reason. The referees had no alternative but to call this game right then and there. There's no way they can continue. No way. Okay. This will probably go down in the history of NBA as one of the worst situations of fan action as well as player response in the history of the NBA. By far. It's just a shame. Anyway, suffice to say, players got punched on by fans. Fans got punched. There were a lot of different things going on. From the Jamal Tinsleys of the world to the Jermaine O'Neals, just Rasheed Wallace, everyone up in the stands trying to get peace restored. You know, I see, oh my goodness, Richard Hamilton also being pushed back by his coach. This one, Larry Brown was coaching the Pistons. Ron Artest being held by Matt Harpering. Just trying to restore some order. Suffice to say, now as these players were leaving the court, Reggie Miller, who is now also an NBA Hall of Famer, trying to get Pacer players back to the locker room, get them back safely. Just absolute chaos that night. And for those of you who remember this, you know, fans were throwing popcorn and beers down on players as they were trying to rush them into the locker rooms. Just a terrible display by the fans as well. I mean, just horrible. Anyway. The anniversary of that was this week, and a black eye, a bit of a black eye for Major League Basketball, as it were. Anyway, bad news for Toronto, the Raptors, DeRon DeRozan, tears a tendon in his groin. He'll be out for a while. Let's take a look at your NHL real quick. NHL conferences. So the Blackhawks played LA last night and win the rematch 4-1. That's just how they tend to do these days. Looking like the Blackhawks of old, Larcy. Standings. All right. Let's do conference standing because we only really care about players in that regard. All right. Boston and Toronto both control the Eastern Conference, both of those sitting at 149, 112-8. High on the totem pole in the East, or sorry, in the West. The Los Angeles Kings are 12-7, Winnipeg 12-9, Minnesota 39. You got to go down a little ways, but you find Chicago and Edmonton in the thick of things as well. Wait, hang on a second. What just happened? Where is that at? Okay, that's just odd. It's just odd. We're looking at divisions. Is that what this is? Is that why it looks on the score like that? Pittsburgh just outside the playoff now? 16? No, that's not right. They're tops of the division. We're looking at the division now. So the Blackhawks are 15-8-1, and our friends in Calgary happen to be 15-8-2. So for those of you looking for some love for the Great Northwest, there you go. Calgary's doing well. And to all the friends around the nation, on this last minute, we thank you. We love you, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. And you've got your picks. You've got everything you need to make your rush to the window, and hopefully you don't lose too much money today. But that's going to do it. We will see you next time. Only on the Fastest 60 Minute Sports. My name is Vinny Moore. Have a great Sunday. Enjoy the games, everybody. Take care. See ya.